Colonialism has a legal definition now. And I want to talk to issues of law to a certain extent, because after all, the entire body politic of this country, falsely, to be sure, nonetheless believing it, have been indoctrinated virtually from birth to believe that what distinguishes this country from all other countries is that it is a law, a nation of laws, not of men, as it is put. By that they mean people. Okay? Just translations are sometimes in order. Nation of laws. It's the law. That's why Free and Critter and Rob are in prison. That's why Leonard Peltier is in prison. That's why the Puerto Rican independence people were in prison until their sentences were commuted, because the Puerto Ricans managed to make it more profitable for the powers that were keeping their fighters behind bars to let them loose than they could gain by keeping them in. And that's ultimately a lesson to be learned as well. And if you want to get people out, and there's been talk about that, you have to make it cost prohibitive to keep them in. How you do that? Well, I will not engage in sedition here tonight. I will say that this is a very bright group. Use your imaginations. That's what distinguishes you from a carrot, you see. Put your imagination to work. Well, law, legal definition of colonialism, is the imposition of one nation upon another in such a way, and I can actually quote George Bush the first on this, okay, it usurps its legitimate government, appropriates its assets and territory, and subordinates its population to the will of the dominating country. Now, for colonialism to be, in effect, legally speaking, this is international law in its current state of formulation, both parties have to be nations in their own right. And there's lots of ways, sociological, historical, anthropological, and otherwise, that you can get at what a definition of a nation might be. But legally speaking, this remains consistent because it's a legal definition which is at issue. It means that you'd be recognized as such by other recognized nations. They got a little chicken and egg thing going on there, but it's clear that the colonial powers at least recognize themselves as being sovereign nations, and anyone they recognize as being a sovereign nation was. And the most conventional and expedient route to convey recognition was enter into a bilateral treaty relation with them. Treaties under the Vienna Convention and a number of other instruments, as well as customary international law, are restricted to relations between sovereign national powers. Doesn't say state. It says sovereign national powers. Any party to a bilateral treaty relation with a recognized nation is ipso facto, as they say in court, recognized formally by the other party as being a nation in its own right. Well, in the United States of America, forget Canada. We can talk about the numbered treaties up there as well. The same principle applies north of that funny little line they drew across the North American continent to divide between crown territory on the one hand and decolonized, quote, territory to the south. Okay. In the United States, there are 401, by Vine Deloria's count, the large volumes that he and DeMalle just released, 401 ratified treaties between the federal government of the United States on the one hand and one or more indigenous peoples on the other. In each one of these instances, there's the conveyance of formal recognition by the United States that the other parties to the treaty were nations separate, distinct, and on equal sovereign footing to the United States. Each and every one of those 401 instruments is violated to the extent that the United States has unilaterally imposed itself upon the indigenous people with whom the treaty was signed. That is formally understood to be a colonial relationship, and legally speaking, sticking with law for the moment, legally speaking, it is a crime under international law and has been since the promulgation of the United Nations Charter in 1945. At the behest, I might add, of the United States, who never intended from the outset to comply with it. So there you have your nation of laws. Laws serve power. It was put by a Spaniard around 1550 when asked by the King of Spain, Ferdinand at the time, why he should be interested in subsidizing the imposition of Spanish language on colonial subjects. Because, the scholar said, language is the perfect instrument of empire. Language, particularly in the form of legal proclamation, I might add, is the perfect instrument of empire. This is why we deal with law, both in that sense, but also because it is a lens through which we can understand the the nature of relationships, and through which we can make an articulation as to the right of things that will resonate with the broadest possible sector of the population. They may reject it, they may refuse it, they may wriggle, they may slither, but they can't really get off the hook of their own rhetoric on this, and that's why it's a useful lens for examination and a useful medium for articulation.